During the campaigns of the Revolution, the French introduced a new system of tactics into the art of war, which perplexed the oldest generals, and very nearly destroyed the most ancient monarchies in Europe. They undertook, what had never before been attempted, to make shift without a number of things which had always been held to be indispensable in warfare. They required novel exertions on the part of their troops which no civilized nations had ever thought of. They achieved great actions in an incredibly short space of time, and they risked human life without hesitation to obtain the object in view. The French had less money and fewer men than their enemies. Their resources were infinitely inferior. Nevertheless, they were constantly victorious until their adversaries chose to imitate their example. The Americans have introduced a similar system into their commercial speculations, and they do for cheapness what the French did for conquest. The European sailor navigates with prudence. He only sets sail when the weather is favorable. If an unforeseen accident befalls him, he puts into port. At night he furls a portion of his canvas, and when the whitening billows intimate the vicinity of the land, he checks his way and takes an observation of the sun. But the American neglects these precautions and braves the dangers. He weighs anchor in the midst of tempestuous gales. By night and by day he spreads his sheets to the wind. He repairs as he goes along such damage as his vessel may have sustained from the storm, and when he at last approaches the term of his voyage, he darts onward to the shore as if he had already descried a port. The Americans are often shipwrecked, but no trader crosses the seas so rapidly. And as they perform the same distance in a shorter time, they can perform it at a cheaper rate. The European touches several times at different ports in the course of a long voyage. He loses a good deal of precious time in making the harbor, or in waiting for a favorable wind to leave it, and he pays daily dues to be allowed to remain there. The American starts from Boston to go to purchase tea in China. He arrives at Canton, stays there a few days, and then returns. In less than 2 years he has sailed as far as the entire circumference of the globe, and he has seen land but once. It is true that during a voyage of 8 or 10 months he has drunk brackish water and lived upon salt meat, that he has been in a continual contest with the sea, with disease, and with a tedious existence, but upon his return he can sell a pound of his tea for half a penny less than the English merchant, and his purpose is accomplished. I cannot better explain my meaning than by saying that the Americans affect a sort of heroism in their manner of trading. But the European merchant will always find it very difficult to imitate his American competitor, who, in adopting the system which I have just described, follows not only a calculation of his gain, but an impulse of his nature. The inhabitants of the United States are subject to all the wants and all the desires which result from an advanced stage of civilization. But as they are not surrounded by a community admirably adapted, like that of Europe, to satisfy their wants, they are often obliged to procure for themselves the various articles which education and habit have rendered necessaries.